My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
Always great to be here. Thanks for having me, Greg.
Well, just last week at this time, we were talking about how Mitt Romney survived a tough scrape in the Rust Belt in Michigan over Rick Santorum. Last Tuesday, of course, was Super Tuesday, and all the nail-biting was done over Ohio, where Romney once again edged out Rick Santorum, this time by an even narrower margin. Out of the 10 states, Romney takes 6, Santorum takes 3, Newt takes his home state of Georgia. So to some extent, it was a good night for Romney. Others say that the fact that he darn near lost Ohio means that he's still got a lot of work to do in his own party. Who's right?
Well, as my smarter wife likes to say, 6 of one, half a dozen of another. Rick Santorum can claim yet another victory because he's underfinanced. He relies on volunteers and scraping together a campaign almost at the last minute in some states, and yet he came very close to Mitt Romney. Now, Mitt Romney not only won, he filed delegates wherever they could be filed. Rick Santorum did not. He was the big winner on Super Tuesday in the sense that he won 6 states and now has over one-third of the 1,144 delegates needed to be the Republican nominee for president. On the other hand, Rick Santorum can crow a bit, not only because of his Ohio showing, but because he won Tennessee and Oklahoma comfortably, and in a surprise, he won North Dakota's caucuses. I spoke to Scott Hennen, our colleague in talk radio from the Rough Rider State, who said he was headed to a caucus. He sensed Santorum would win because he's lit up the place with his appearances. So the race goes on.
Very interesting, John. Now, of course, the race heads to the Kansas caucuses on Saturday and then back to the Deep South, Alabama and Mississippi next Tuesday. Doesn't exactly sound like ways for Mitt Romney to boost his momentum, but what do you think? Do you think he can scratch out at least one of those states, or will this give more momentum to either Newt or Santorum or both?
Well, let's not forget Washington State, which is having its caucus selection process, and he's winning there, albeit by a close margin. Kansas, he's backed by most of the organization, but as we're learning in this process, the organization does not always deliver. And then the territories are having caucuses this weekend. As for Mississippi and Alabama, they will be decisive, almost seminal moments for the man who we haven't mentioned yet, Newt Gingrich. He did win his home state of Georgia with 76 delegates, the big casino of Super Tuesday. On the other hand, if he doesn't win in a sister state in the South, I think the pressure on him will be very strong to get out of the race. And that's not me editorializing. That's just a fact.
John, you got to certainly talk a little bit about Ron Paul. Still hasn't won yet, keeps picking up delegates here and there. Is there a path for him in any way?
Well, I think Ron Paul at age 77 knows this is his last hurrah, and he's pretty much indicated he would not run as a third-party candidate. By the way, he has to make up his mind on that because, as you and I have discussed, the Libertarian Convention will be held in Las Vegas in May. That's coming up quite soon. Another factor entering into Ron Paul's decision-making process is his son, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, a very bright young senator who may have a political future. If Ron Paul runs third party and helps the re-election of Barack Obama, a lot of people, beginning with one Mark Levin, will vent the sins of the father on the son, I assure you.
John, let's talk about a couple other results from Tuesday night in Ohio real quickly, because it was also a primary day for congressional races. Let's start with the Democrats. Due to Republicans controlling the legislature and the census taking away a couple House seats from Ohio, you had two Democrats running against each other in the same district, longtime Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur from the Toledo area, in a district that snakes along the southern edge of Lake Erie all the way over to Cleveland, where Dennis Kucinich has been a member for a long time. In the end, Kaptur beats Kucinich by about 10,000 votes. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, the redistricting process will, every 10 years, hurt some people and cause friends to run against each other and no longer be friends. The case in point in Ohio was Kaptur versus Kucinich. Marcy Kaptur had the bulk of the new 9th district. 47% of her old Toledo-based district is the new 9th, only 40% of Dennis Kucinich's former Cleveland district is in that district. And in the end, she won. He was very bitter about it and would not concede. And the Star Wars nature of the race continues because in November she will face Republican Samuel Joseph Wurzelbacher, also known as Joe the Plumber.
Joe the Plumber. Well, that's not the only disappointed incumbent in Ohio on Tuesday night. In addition to Kucinich losing his primary, this one was not member versus member. This was actually probably even a bigger shock. Gene Schmidt, who's been in Congress for a few terms now from down in the Cincinnati area, losing to what I gather is a challenge from the right, from the Tea Party, from a guy named Brad Wenstrup. John, did you have this on your radar?
First, thank you for saying the name, because I was going to say her opponent, what's-his-name, who won. I did not have it on my radar, and I know the national media and the Tea Party movement itself is ballyhooing this as a victory because Congressman Schmidt voted to extend the debt ceiling, and they didn't like it. They say this is the shape of things to come, retribution. I submit with respect. I've covered Jean Schmidt since she first won a special election, met her a couple of times. She's a controversial figure. People still talk about the day she quoted a Marine colonel from her district implying that the late John Murtha did not live up to his reputation and background as a Marine colonel. It turned out to be false. She's had ethical controversy, and she's never really made peace with other factions within the Republican Party in Hamilton County. She's had a couple of challenges in her primary. All of this was stirred together in a cauldron pot, and out of it came the upset victory by this first-time office seeker.
John, real quickly, the big international story, of course, this week was the visit to Washington of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It's no secret that he and President Obama do not see eye to eye on a lot. Based on what you saw and heard this week, do you think Netanyahu pulled Obama closer to his position or vice versa?
Well, Obama certainly would want people to believe that he and Netanyahu kissed and made up. At his news conference on Tuesday afternoon, the president addressed the fact that he has always been committed to Israel and believe it has a right to exist. And he took very sharp aim at Iran and said the development of a nuclear musketry is unacceptable. And regarding whether Israel can bomb Iran's nuclear facilities, he said, publicly what he told us, he told Netanyahu privately, and that is that Israel has a right to defend itself and look after its own interests. You can interpret that as what you will, but I think Mr. Netanyahu went a little happier than when he came.
Well, we'll see what happens in the coming months here, if in fact there is going to be any military action. John, we'll leave it there. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Greg. It's always a pleasure.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.